Monday, March 28th. Having a conversation concerning today's headlines and real-life challenges. I'm Tom Lamprecht, along with Pastor Harry Reeder. Stay with us as we apply a biblical worldview with gospel solutions to put the issues of today in perspective. Harry, we have started a process which I've always found fascinating. That's the confirmation hearing of a Supreme Court justice, the nominee by President Biden, Ketanji Brown Jackson. Harry, there's an interesting op-ed written by Paul Waldman, who I would say probably leans to the left, but he talks about judicial philosophy. He quoted Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who claimed judicial philosophy is a key qualification for the Supreme Court. While noting there are plenty of smart lawyers out there, McConnell argued that instead of applying laws neutrally, some would rather start with liberal outcomes and reason backwards.
And then, of course, he goes on to name certain senators to keep your eye on. I think your original statement that he leans left is gracious but inaccurate. I think he's fully planted, and this is a hit piece. This has become quite a display of political theater, the process of examining these Supreme Court nominees. Tom, I've lived long enough to have watched the evolution of this, or the devolution of this, however you would evaluate it. But early on, Supreme Court justices nominated by presidents, elections have consequences. Therefore, when the president nominated them, that had been settled because of the election of the president, and this process was pretty much perfunctory. But once the Supreme Court, beginning pretty much with Franklin Roosevelt, became weaponized for progressive secular political objectives and various unconstitutional decisions such as Roe v. Wade and others began to be announced by the Supreme Court, then all of a sudden conservatives said, hey, we need to take a look at this. When a nominee comes, number one, what is their view of being a justice on the Supreme Court? Number two, what is their judicial philosophy? And that became the examining point. On the other side, those who want to protect the new philosophy of judicial activism, they begin, as this particular journalist, Mr. Waldman, becomes Exhibit A, they begin to decry that activity, and they would call it personal attack or racist or deceptive, etc. But conservatives have found out, no, we got to hold our line on this.
Waldman says there's a particular phrase you should watch out for that will likely be repeated dozens of times, judicial philosophy. The phrase should raise red flags because it's a signal that a person using it is about to pull a fast one, either to claim that they themselves believe something they really don't, or to pretend that an attack they're making on Jackson is far more high-minded than it actually is.
You begin with her making her trips around to see Republican and Democratic senators for private visits, and then comes the opening round, and that's when she introduces herself. She speaks of her parents, she speaks of her relationship with her father, and then you go on to hear of her experiences in the law and her rather short tenure at this time on the Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia. But now we start coming to the issue of judicial philosophy, and her answers have been, I don't have one. That's pretty much what she's saying. As they're coached to not visually or verbally do anything to derail the nomination, this particular nominee has taken it to a step of not overly volunteering information about her previous decisions, but basically to claim I don't have a judicial philosophy.
Harry, how is that possible? I mean, everyone has some sort of philosophy as they approach life and they approach decisions. How is it possible not to have a judicial philosophy?
Well, Tom, that's the very reason you and I do this program, isn't it? Because we believe people have a worldview, and that worldview becomes your framework, your foundation, and your filter as to how you evaluate issues and events and how you respond to issues and events and how you live your life. You have a world and life view. Well, how in the world can you not have a subset of your world and life view if you're a judge where you don't have some world and life view that translates into a philosophy? What does it mean to be a judge? That's judicial philosophy. If she doesn't have a judicial philosophy, there's only one of two possibilities. Every time a case comes, her judicial philosophy is evolving or it is a disingenuous statement in order that you don't have to answer questions about your judicial philosophy. What would your judicial philosophy be? Well, number one, what's your view of a judge? Historically, judges are to be legal arbiters. My life was pretty much built around baseball in my younger years, and both my granddaddy and my daddy, and then I, in order to get through college, I umpired. One of the terms for a baseball umpire is an arbiter. He doesn't come to the game and say, today I'm going to decide what strikes and balls are. No, he gets behind the plate. He's got a 17.5-inch plate, and now he's got to do, as I remember my granddaddy telling me when I went out for my first behind the plate umpiring experience, he said, son, you got to call him like you see him. What he meant was, there's a plate, look at the ball. Has it got the plate or does it not get the plate? Arbiters who have a fixed point, the umpire, the fixed point is a 17.5-inch plate. Justices, and particularly the Supreme Court justice, you've got a fixed point. It is the Constitution of the United States. The second piece of the judicial philosophy is, do you believe it is a quote-unquote living document that you can change through your interpretations? That's called judicial activism, creating law from the bench instead of making judgments by a given law from the bench. And that, of course, is what we have experienced from about 1945 with a vengeance all the way up until recent days, where those who have what we call a textualist or a constitutionalist or an originalist view as a Supreme Court judge. We don't make law, we interpret law, and we apply law to the case. The law is not invented by our judgments. The law has already been given to us. It's called the Constitution. So you interpret it according to the meaning of the text. Are there challenging questions? Absolutely. But you go to the text, you look for the consistency and the clarity of the text itself, and that becomes the fixed point by which you make the call as a justice in the case that is before you. What did the text mean in the original composition of it? And until the legislative bodies change it, that's what you work from in terms of law and order in our society and the affirmation of certain values in our society as contained in the Constitution and in the Bill of Rights. That's what the effort is actually about when you talk about judicial philosophy. With all due respect, I am certain this nominee tries to treat each case as unique as it comes to her courtroom as she rules from the bench. But with all due respect, I do not believe you can be a judge without a judicial philosophy of what does a judge do and what are you making judgments from? Are you making judgments from the political, cultural moment or from the document of the Constitution? Tom, let me finish up by saying this kind of gets me pretty excited and passionate because that's exactly what I face as a minister of the gospel. I am called to preach the word. I am not called to preach sermons that create a new Bible. I am called to exegete the text and expound the text and preach the text. And whatever I say has to be consistent with the sacred text. Now, I'm not saying the Constitution is the Bible. I'm just saying that the same thing that governs a pastor, to be faithful to the text so that sound doctrine is proclaimed with sound words for sound lives, that same pattern is to come to the judicial bench. You take an oath to uphold and apply the Constitution, not what you think it should say, but what it does say. If you want it to say something else, we have a legislative process. The legislative editing of the Constitution should not take place from the Supreme Court. That takes place through the Congress. The Supreme Court is to make judgments based upon the Constitution. It will be interesting to see if the questions can circumvent her statement, I don't have a judicial philosophy, by actually drawing out by conversation and by questions what is her judicial philosophy.
If you haven't done so already, let me invite you to subscribe to Today in Perspective. It's easy. Simply go to your podcast icon on your smartphone or your tablet. Type in Today in Perspective with Harry Reeder. Each and every weekday will automatically download to your device a new edition of this podcast. A great way to stay in touch. Well, do stop by again tomorrow, Tuesday, as we continue our conversation and as we apply a biblical worldview to put the issues of today in perspective.